The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 12, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all. Well, today I thought I would talk about the final verse of Nagarjuna's Mulabhanyamaka Karika, his masterwork, great teaching. In fact, if you carefully read, and that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit today, maybe not so much how to read it, but just give you some tips here. And it's in that last verse. There's 448 verses in the Mulabhanyamaka Karika. And it's in that last verse where Nagarjuna gives his thanks to Gautama. He says, I bow to Gautama, the Buddha. I bow to Gautama, who out of compassion has taught the true Dharma in order to relinquish all views. So he's gives his thanks, his respects to the Buddha. But he doesn't say the Buddha, he's referring to Gautama, the man who taught out of compassion. He taught the true Dharma, the true teaching. And what would that be? The true teaching. Don't all teachings kind of offer themselves as the truth? Is Nagarjuna just doing the same here? Or did the Buddha? This is his teaching. Just that man, Gautama. What's so special about him? Why should we think of him as having the true teaching while what the others don't? This teaching could very well be that Nagarjuna, who came about 500 years after the time of Gautama, and wrote his masterwork, the Mulabhanyamaka Karika. It could be that he was responding to this. He wrote it out of the response that we might have of someone saying, this is the true Dharma, as opposed to anybody else who's saying, this is the true teaching. Believe this or believe that. What Nagarjuna did was, he didn't give you anything that he believed, nor did the Buddha. This is not a belief system, these teachings. This is very important to understand. And if we can really understand what Nagarjuna was doing in this text, what he's pointing to, he doesn't mean for you to pick up anything or to hold anything, just to read it and look at it. Don't even really ponder it so much. Just read it, get acquainted with it. And this is really quite different than ordinary teaching. Because with ordinary teaching, you're expected to grasp something, to take hold of something, a belief or a truth, depending on what you're studying. Doesn't have to be some profound philosophy or religion or something like that. Just the most mundane thing. But, you know, auto mechanics or whatever. He's just learning this or learning that, taking hold of this or taking hold of that. That's all very functional and useful. But what the Buddha did and what Nagarjuna recognized and what he helps us with in this particular text, I'll stop saying its name, but I'll just this text, I'll just call it the Karika for short. But you know, what he's doing there is not setting out something for us to grasp or to take hold of. He's doing just what I've repeated many times, Suzuki Roshi says in his Zen Mind Beginner's Mind, when my talk is over, your listening is over, there's no need to remember what I said. And of course, that seems ridiculous. But it's because this seems so ridiculous to us, this sort of thing, something such as that, that we don't wake up. If we're interested in enlightenment, which is what the true teaching would offer, we have to understand this, that the true teaching is the teaching that isn't handing you something, isn't handing you a concept or something you can grasp with your mind, or even some holy object that you can hold in your hands or whatever. Nothing like that whatsoever. That is all of our confusion, our delusion, our longing mind, trying to reach something and to grasp something and to take hold of something. What the Buddha did is something other than that, something quite different. We have it, like in the Kakaya Nagota Sutra, where the man, Kakayana, comes up to the Buddha, and he said, this is a time in India when they were getting out of kind of just the old traditional ways of, you know, bowing to the various gods or leaving sacrifices, whatever, to help the farmer with his crops or all the kind of stuff like this. Reaching down into more philosophical concerns and things of this sort. And soon, well, over a couple of centuries or so, but pretty soon there were all these different kinds of teachings. And people were teaching this Dharma. You know, in this case, teaching means Dharma. So, but teaching this or teaching that. And all saying, well, this is true. This is the true Dharma, the true way, whatever. And so this man comes to Buddha and he says, well, they're all saying that this is true or this is true. He said, they can't all be true. And he asks, is there any true Dharma? What would that be? And the Buddha congratulated on being, you know, doubtful about this prospect. Now again, everything I'm going to say today is really pointing very sharply to what's necessary. If you want to wake up, just pay very careful attention. Don't grasp anything I'm saying. Don't believe. Because I'm not going to hand you anything to believe. I'm just trying to acquaint you with what needs to go on here in terms of just understanding the nature of this reality and to wake up to it. And I'm just saying, it doesn't involve grasping, including grasping anything I'm saying now. But the Buddha, he praised this man for saying, yeah, that's a very doubtful thing there. The man says, well, to what extent is there right view? Or is there a right view? And that's what Nagarjuna now is praising the Buddha with. He said, out of compassion, he taught the true Dharma, which is unlike anything else in this that you might want to teach, in that it's not offering you anything to grasp. We can wake up to this, and this waking up would be to reality. But it's not in anything the Buddha says, or Suzuki says. That's why he says, you don't need to remember anything I've said here. These teachers just saying things here and there to help, because you already have a direct experience of reality, truth, all the time. This is all we live out, all, moment to moment. But it's in our thinking where we miss it. We get it wrong. It's always in our thinking. We grasp at things. This is why we remain deluded. Or we just continuously fall back into delusion. And then we approach a teaching like the Buddha. Well, he's using words. There's a book. You can read it, which I do recommend that you read it. And maybe over and over again. I've read it. I couldn't tell you how many times now in the 60 years or so I've been reading this text. and I've gone through it. At first, I was struggling, trying to figure it out and grasping it, and it was rough. It was hard. Eventually, I learned I was being invited to just read it. Made it a lot easier, and then the understanding has a chance to come. But it won't be in the words, it won't be in the text. And that's what Gautama, Nagarjuna is praising the Buddha here. It says, I bow to the Buddha, or to Gautama, who out of compassion taught the true Dharma. And what is the true Dharma? He says, in order to relinquish all views, including any view you might take hold of that seems to have come from something the Buddha said, or from Suzuki Roshi, or Nagarjuna, or Dogen. Dogen, who said to his monks, I tell you, monks, the reason you don't wake up is because you don't let go of your views. You keep holding views. Now, it's interesting here, the wording that Nagarjuna uses here, when he said that the Buddha taught the true Dharma in order to relinquish all views. That's important, all views, including anything the Buddha said or anything that's written down in Buddhist texts. Relinquish them. Now, we might think, and there's teachings that operate like this, and they are, unfortunately, they come from a very general misunderstanding that people will have, even in particularly of Buddhist texts and teachings and things like that. We get the idea that you're not supposed to have a view. When Kukkayana, when he asked the Buddha, to what extent is there a right view? The Buddha said, first just saying, well, yeah, it's good you have that doubt. You know, that's helpful. I don't know if he said it's good, but it shows you're noticing something there. It's very important to notice, and maybe I would say to not lose sight of. Grasp views. So the Buddha said, for those who see with right wisdom, with actual wisdom, not the wisdom that is found in words and texts and things like this, but in direct seeing. Those who see directly the uprising of the world as it has come to be moment by moment. I can't snap my fingers fast enough. You see the uprising, things appearing here. This whole thing appearing. If you see this, it's very fluid, very liquid, it's full of motion, change. It appears to be. Actually, it's not, but it appears to be. But if you see this with right wisdom, not getting hold of any bit of it, he said, those who see correctly what's going on here, they don't come up with the notion of non-existence. You know, the notion of non-existence doesn't occur to one as that, who sees this. To those with right wisdom who see the ceasing of the world in the same way, that world that was all those moments, I can't even count them, of me walking into this room, say, you were all sitting here, we could say. Of course, it wasn't you that was sitting here. But faster than I can snap my fingers to count, we can't count them. Moment by moment. That's ceasing. So we're seeing, one who's awake is just seeing this, the appearance of arising and ceasing. But it is so rapid, so fast, there isn't anything or things that are arising or ceasing. Including the various views or ideas that we would have. When we take hold of a particular thing, and then now we'll see it persisting. Like, say, I gave the example of me walking, so me, maybe you saw me coming into the room and walking across the room here. So there's, you know, I'm Steve, by the way, for those of you who might not know me, or my name. But anyway, so there's Steve is walking, and then he sits in a chair. And that's all Steve. He's changing, of course he's changing, we're all changing. You know, but in just a few minutes, it didn't change very much. He didn't come in as a little baby, and now he's an old guy sitting here. You know, the change is very slow, but it's still Steve persisting. Yeah, that's what we think we see, but that's with grasping. We grasp that thing that we're calling Steve. Well, what exactly is that? Or the cup, or anything, or yourself, you know? Are you the person who sat in the chair where you're sitting now? Can't really say that you are. So you're not. Well, Nagarjuna will point this out in this karika here that, well, no, you can't really say that you're not. You can't say that you are. But we want to grasp a view. And then we want to know, well, which is it? Is this the person who walked in here, or is it not? The Buddha just points out that this is all very doubtful. That's what he said to Kakayana. So that's all very doubtful. It's good that you, you know, I keep using the word good, but you notice that. Approaching wisdom there, right wisdom. So he points out that for those who see this arising, this ceasing, the apparent arising, because there's actually nothing arising. You don't ever get a hold of anything that's actually arising or ceasing, ever. And this is what the awakened wake up to. And the Buddha said, thus far, you know, if you notice this with right wisdom, he said, thus far there is right view. This is right view, but there's no held view there. The other person, when Kakayana was asking him, well, this person says this view, and this is right, and that's wrong, and all that. These are what the Buddha referred to as frozen views. They're grasped views. But what's important to notice here is that when he said he taught the true Dharma in order to relinquish all views. The frozen view is a grasp view. You freeze it. There's a Steve persisting there, at least for a little time here. And it's a grasped view. And we think, oh, well, that's reality. No, there's a lot of abstraction in that. The reality is you can't grasp it. That's what we can wake up to. And this is to be without a grasp or a held or a frozen view. This is what enlightenment is. It's the seeing, the realizing of this fluid reality, where there is nothing, not a thought, not an idea, not a belief, not an object, persisting for a moment. This isn't nothingness, obviously. So here's the other important point here to notice about this. He talked about the relinquishment of views, the opening the hand. Uchama talks about the opening the hand of thought. Thought, where you have, now you had grasped an idea there, and you're believing that, and you're trying to figure everything out in relation to that, and I'm trying to understand what Uchama is saying in relation to, he must be holding something. No, if he's awake, no. The Buddha or Nagarjuna writing this, he does this without offering grasped views. But it's these grasped views, he's held these believed views. This is where now we fight, and we're fighting over total abstractions. Look at the crazy human world today. People believing this and people trying to get others to believe this way or to get that impression of those over there, all this stuff. Struggling all the time, fighting, just trying to shape views and to control them and all of this. It is all delusion. That's what this teaching and this practice is about, is to wake up to this, and to wake up to this particularly in your own mind, to see yourself grasping, holding to a view. And then, of course, now with the grasp view, now we can label it, well, this was that a good view or is that a bad one? You have a bad one over there. You're, in fact, so bad, we should get rid of you. You know, all this kind of stuff comes from that, grasping, freezing, holding to views. And then we want to know, well, which one is right? It's all delusion. So at the end of this long text of 448 verses, Nagarjuna now thanking Gautama, the man, not freezing him out and putting up as the Buddha and something now we should worship or whatever. People ended up doing stuff like this, but that wasn't the... If you get right back to the purity of what it was the Buddha was pointing out, and that's what Nagarjuna is doing in this text. He's really showing the purity of what the Buddha was pointing out. Nothing here to grasp. But this is enlightenment. If we actually see this, it's not holding it as an idea now, oh, enlightenment, and oh, and I would like that. These are all grasps, including this whole thing about I, me. There, it seems like there's something like that here. Looks like it. Looks like there's something persisting, somebody walking across the floor. All of this. Yeah, and Nagarjuna and the Buddha to point out, we don't get rid of that. You can't get rid of these appearances. Here they are. But they're empty of the kind of substance or reality that we otherwise naively and quickly, immediately grant to all of the various things that are appearing here. These are grasped views, frozen views. We don't realize we're holding all these grasped and frozen views. Most of the people we encounter are doing the same thing. And it isn't like, so they're bad or they're, you know, we say, well, they're deluded then or something like that, as if that's a bad thing. Nowhere in these teachings do we ever say delusion is bad or that enlightenment is good. Again, those are grasp views and those are going to lead to the kind of struggles and fighting and difficulty, drivenness and shame and all that stuff that occur in the human world. But it's all born of delusion and confusion, not actually realizing and engaging, living with, entirely out of the utter fluidity of this life. If things were the way that we naively think they are with our frozen views, everything would be frozen, and that would, I've called this wink-out time with consciousness. There's no consciousness. But of course, there is consciousness or awareness. That is the reality. The awareness is the reality. But it's not awareness of persisting, the true awareness. We can have conceptual awareness, which is, yeah, I'm aware of, you know, the cup sitting here and all of that, people moving about, whatever. But those are grasped awarenesses. Again, we can notice all of that. We might have the idea that this is about not having a view. Yeah, well, maybe not having a view, not holding a view. Yeah. But we might think that this is about making our minds blank. You know, the meditation we do, you should make your mind blank. You know? Well, I don't think you can do that. It might happen briefly. But as a human being, with human minds, whatever, they're constantly bringing up stuff. But what we'll do is we'll grab hold of a thought or an image or an idea or whatever, a fear or, you know, something, oh, I got to do such and such, I forgot I was supposed to do this, and all of that kind of stuff. And then we're hanging on to this, and pretty soon we're building other things. And that's what we do. And what we're encouraged to do is just to relinquish that. Open the hand of thought, as Uchiyama says. Relinquish the view. And that's what the Buddha is speaking of, not necessarily to make your mind blank. But if you're watching this, you're not going to load up your mind with a lot of just busyness either. You just start to watch that a bit. We do need to take a view once in a while to do something, maybe to cook dinner or whatever, all sorts of things. But then we can just let them go, let them go. And not make the mistake that the world is actually that way. It isn't any particular way, because it's utterly fluid. And that's what these teachings are pointing to here. And you might think, well, I haven't really heard this, and it's in our teachings all over the place, in the Heart Sutra. Far apart from every perverted view, that's another term, perverted view. A perverted view is a grasped view, a frozen view. You know, so far apart from every frozen view, the Bodhisattva dwells in nirvana. Yeah, with this release and not grasping the view, this is what's called nirvana. It's not a place that physically we go to, it's like Buddhist heaven. I've heard it described that way, various things. Don't get any ideas about nirvana. I don't have any ideas about nirvana. But nirvana is just this relinquishment, and to, you know, to the extent that we can release this, you know, we're fine. But if you read through, I could take you through the Heart Sutra, and just show you it's loaded with just this very thing that I'm trying to focus on here today, this matter of right view and what that is. It's not exactly a view. It's not a particular view. It's not a view of some particular thing. It's not a belief. It's not an idea. It's just not grasping. And noticing the grasping, don't punish yourself because you've been grasping. Shame yourself or whatever, blame yourself or think, oh, I can't do this, I keep it. Just notice it and let it go. Come back to this. It'll change over time. I've been doing this now almost 60 years. And I can tell you, over time, this, you know, it'll get easier on you, more fluid. But don't ever scold yourself or blame yourself for having an ordinary mind. You know, and by the way, I've been doing this and I still have an ordinary mind. It isn't like somehow now that's holding frozen views again, something like that. But it is about, that's why I was saying too, just read this thing. Don't ponder it. Suzuki Roshi, what he's, you know, pointing to there too. Another example where this shows up in our teaching would be like in the precepts. The very first precept, not to kill. Yeah. Well, Bodhidharma's reading of that is if you're holding a view, and in this particular case, the view of extinction, that something can die, and maybe we can kill it, but something I don't like or I think is bad and in the world and I want to get rid of that, you know, and we'll act out of that, and beliefs like that. What are you going after? What are you talking about? What is it you might want to persist in? You know, all of that. But this is, so Bodhidharma in his precepts, he said, yeah, not nursing a view of extinction. Yeah, holding this view of extinction, that there is such a thing as this, that there are things that come into existence, persist for a time, and then they go out of existence. Yeah, that's the ordinary take on it, ordinary view. Now, these are things that if you look carefully, you realize you're grasping all sorts of things that if you look carefully again, you realize you're really not holding anything in particular there, ever. If we could really wake up to this and just see this, then we won't violate this precept of not to kill. There's all sorts of other places too where the if you're looking carefully at the various kinds of teachings we have in the diamonds, all over the place, the various koans that are available and all that kind of stuff, but you'll see references to this in one way or another. And also it's extremely important to reflect on your own mind here and that and notice, if, are you holding something? Because if you're confused by what you're reading there, say the koans of the Blue Cliff Record, whatever it might be, you'll at some point, because they often really bother us in some way, or we find them difficult. And you're holding something somewhere. Don't get mad at yourself, or it's like that's bad or anything. But all it's just showing you that's what's happening here. There's something being held here that isn't frozen. See if you can find that. But don't start searching and looking for something, because you're just going to start planting things there. Oh, I see. Don't do that. Just look and move on. Read another koan or whatever at a different time anyway. But just come back to it and come back to it and reflect on your own mind a little bit. Don't say anything about your mind and what it's doing. You can see when it's scattered or nervous or whatever. I realize now I'm getting this old mind. I figured, there's a good chance I'm not going to remember that little line there, but there was a time when I'd have all kinds of things up there. But so I hope maybe I got a little of this uncovered for you there. He says, Abhauta Gautama, who out of compassion has taught the true Dharma in order to relinquish all views, all views. That's very important to remember. All views, meaning that. So we don't have some of the Gautama's views here that, you don't want to relinquish these. Well, if you look carefully at what Gautama taught, and that's what we do in the Mula Majjhimaka here, these aren't views you can get hold of. When you try, that's why your brain starts burning when you read Nagarjuna and you think, oh, Nagarjuna is so deep, I can't understand. Well, it's because you're trying to grasp what he's saying. And that'll be difficult. In fact, it'll be impossible. Even if you finally arrive at something, oh, I see fine, I see what you... No, probably not. As I said, I've been saying Nagarjuna now, I don't know, going on, it's well over 50 years anyway, and I can't say what's his point. It doesn't really have a point anyway, but if I can't say why he doesn't have a point. But I just, at some point we can start to realize with everything that we're encountering, it is like this. You don't need to clamp down on it or whatever else. When I was the head of this place, I had a lot of responsibilities and things I had to do. There were times and people were coming for this or that, and we had to have things done and all that. I was responsible for all of that. So just do it. Tried to do it as best I could. But now I must say, now that I don't have all those responsibilities anymore, I can just enjoy life as an old man. But there's still work to do. I'm actually working on a rendition of the Mula Majjhimaka right now. That's why I was reading this again and looking at various translations and things. So there's always something that we can do. One of the things that you can always do is just breathe. That's pretty good. But don't make too much out of anything. And just watch that grasping mind. I often tell you, just watch your mind. But what I really should add in there is watch the grasping mind. And notice when you're hanging on to something. You can notice again, but don't judge, but just notice, you might notice how difficult that makes everything. Now, and if you really keep looking, you realize there's uncertainty about what it is I'm holding or what I think. There's uncertainty about it. And that's not comfortable. There's a lot of discomfort with all of that. This doesn't mean to be lackadaisical or uncaring or anything like that. I'm not careful, just, go the way the wind blows. All that. Yeah, that's not what's being said here. There are moments where responsibilities come up, and just take care of them for the moment. And it's time to let them go, let them go. Yeah. Well, maybe I've said enough here. I've gone over. I better stop. But you have any questions about anything I said? Andrew, I was going
to...
Yeah. Well, you're the Sanskrit guy. I think the last word in the Karika is Gautama in Sanskrit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in the most of the English translations I have, the last word is views.
Is what?
Views. To relinquish all views. And I think in the Sanskrit it's more like, you taught to relinquish all views. Thus I bow to Gautama. From my poor readings of Sanskrit, I think that's kind of how the wording goes. But most of the time in English, the last word is views. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question from Cindy Kuchia online.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve. Thank you for the talk. It was very encouraging. I remember the first time that it was probably you that talked about Dogen's admonishment to his monks about the reason you don't wake up is because you don't relinquish your views. And that terminology, calling something views, I just wonder, it sounds like from the quote from the Kakaya Nagoda Sutra too, that perhaps in the Buddhist time that was the language that was used
yes.
to describe kind of held thoughts. Is there another way that you would say that today that for those of us who are living in a time where, maybe even in modern terms, if you mean exactly the same thing it did in the Buddha's time, but I just wonder if there's other ways to put that. If there are just other ways to put that, I'll leave it at that.
So are you asking other ways to put the phrase held view?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well as I said, we have it in a lot of the literature here, the terms like frozen view or grasped view. There's other terms along like that. I don't know if that would help you at all. But it's a belief. That's what these things are. They're beliefs or ideas that we have, and that we think are true. And it could be a negative belief. I mean, like the opposite of a belief, where we're full of doubt about that. Well, that's not true, and we take that as our belief, that's false and that's wrong, and then that's bad. And then we start adding values like good and bad to these things, and it's just a continuous, this is human life, and it's continuously churning with all sorts of trouble and confusion, and very few of us really see what's going on. Because that's quite a thing to do, is to relinquish what you're holding. That's a difficult, it's difficult, and I don't know if it's difficult or not, but it's, at some point, we can see we may, if with the waking up, we see what we're doing, and we can see the mismatch that it has with reality. Because the reality is being lived out, in spite of ourselves, is utterly fluid, totally fluid. There's no solidity to it whatsoever. This is the emptiness that Nagarjuna keeps pointing out in the Karika. But with the grasping of that, it's just sort of grasping at a phantom here, but we think it's real. It looks like we've gotten a hold of something. Maybe it feels like it, sounds like it. And look what I can do with it and make these changes here because I believe this and I'm pushing this through. And well, there we are. And then also, if we kind of slow down, step back, we look. The human life is full of a lot of confusion and suffering. So it was out of compassion that the Buddha taught this, pointed this out. But it's difficult for us to realize how thorough this is, how thoroughgoing it is. This matter of letting go. Oh yeah, but I can't let. Yeah, well, you don't have to let go in the sense of like throw it away, make your mind blank about this. That's too much work over nothing. You can't do that anyway. I don't know how to make my mind blank. There are times when it seems like, that's kind of what happened here or something. I don't know. And I can't tell, has that really happened with me or not? I don't know. I don't think about stuff like that anymore, that's for sure. But it's noticing what we're constantly hanging on to something or trying to move something or push something. Should I do this? Is that what you mean to do? Just look at this mind that seems to be yours. And never mind the minds of others and what they might be thinking. Yeah, we can spend a lot of time on that too. That's all speculation on our part. And it can go in all directions. Yeah. But at some point, we have to wake up to what we're doing. And I see what we're doing as if like what I'm doing or what you're doing. Yeah, well, of course, the language is forcing me to throw out delusional things like that, like I or me or you or we and things like that. On the other hand, these things, such terms and ideas and stuff, are useful, helpful. So we can use them, but we can use them without believing that they're representing something solid that is the way the world is. Because the world isn't any particular way at all. This is why it's alive, I could say. But of course, in just saying that little phrase, I've loaded up a lot of graspable things there, potentially graspable things, without, what I'm saying now, don't grasp any of that, but just kind of... But that's where we are. This is why also when people wake up, they tend to become more silent. Maybe they don't say as much, So I don't know if I'm helping you there, Cindy, or not. But...
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
Sure. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.